Welcome back to the Mackham in the Middle podcast after another Sunderland League game at home to Blackburn Rovers. Another game that was on Sky. 2-1 win with goals from Ross Stewart and a last-minute winner from Emma Sims secured a massive 3 points for Sunderland. And as always, we'll get through everything that happened in the game. Some of the injury news, which unfortunately for Sunderland, came at the back end of the pitch in this game. First and foremost, John, like we said there, it's 3 points. It puts us, well, I think it did put us up to seventh. Obviously, there's a couple of games after us. I'm not entirely sure where we are now, maybe eighth or ninth. And the kind of pattern of how close this championship table is continues, because I think if we win on Thursday, we can go fourth. If we lose, I think it's something about 15th we can go down to.
Yeah, like you say, it was a good win. Obviously, a home win, which we like. I think it's probably the first time for ages we've played really, really well for 90 minutes. And I'd, for me personally, I think we did control the game. And like you say, with the league, you know, how Blackburn are fourth, you know, I'll never know, because I thought, yeah, to be fair, they were honking. You know, I think there's rumours of Dak and Buckley maybe coming in. I think after yesterday, I probably wouldn't touch either of them. Yeah. You know, you're expecting big things of Diaz. I think we've all seen his highlight reel on Sky Sports where he did
just watch that.
You know, give me Ross Stewart over him every single day. But you know, back to the league. If obviously the injuries are hindering us, you know, we'll get onto them. But if it's such a shame that we haven't got a full strength, you know, full squad and playing the good football that we do play, because there's no reason, and we said it a few weeks ago, there's no reason why we couldn't really push on and stake a claim at least, you know, for the playoffs. You know, what one win boosts you up, and you know, a loss will put you down. If you find that consistency, I think that's the difference between the teams who will, you know, do well, and the teams obviously who just sort of like a Blackburn, who will just be championship side, you know, forever, you know, the Preston, those types of teams, and those are the ones you don't really want to be. So that's, if you find the consistency, I think we're, you know, we're on to a winner. But yeah, yesterday, excellent result and excellent performance.
Yeah. Obviously, were Blackburn at the best? Probably not. But, you know, that's, like John alluded to there, Michael, that is going to be the case this season for, well, the majority of teams, bar probably Burnley and Sheffield United, who I think are realistically the only two consistent performers at the moment. Obviously, West Brom have seemed to have turned a corner as well. I think they've won five of the last six. Obviously, one of them was rather unfortunately against us. But the league table doesn't lie still, and Blackburn are third. Obviously, we lost to them in the reverse fixture. Should we have lost that game? Definitely not. You got two decisions that went completely against us, and that is essentially what framed the game and framed the result. And we'll get on to one of the decisions that nearly did the same in this occasion. But, you know, to go and play third in the table, to beat them comfortably, regardless what their manager says about it, it is a sign that with the right additions in January, with a little bit of luck regarding injuries, and if we can just find a little bit more consistency, especially at home, there is no reason you can't finish top six this season.
I'll start off with a tweet that I think a Pompey fan put out, and it sums it up better and kind of goes on what you've just said. And they said, Sunderland sacked their manager, so obviously in this case was Lee Johnson, when they were fourth. We sat there and laughed at them. A year later, they're seventh or eighth in the championship. Makes you think, doesn't it? And I think that sums up, first of all, what a mental 2022 we've had. But to get to your point, yes, I think if you add the right additions in January, and bearing in mind, because we're in a decent position in the table now, you know, there's no reason why players can't think, actually, big club, a side that could easily finish in the top six, let's have it, let's go for it. And to kind of sort of follow up on that, here's a couple of stats, because in addition to watching the Ellis Sims moment back a dozen times since the game yesterday, I looked at the Sky Sports coverage and there were some stats that'd be interesting. And bearing in mind, this is Blackburn, who are third in the league. XG, and I don't usually like to quote this, but I'll make a point. XG, Sunderland 1.93, Blackburn 0.40. Touches in opposition box, Sunderland had 33, Blackburn had 7. Passes in the final third, Sunderland had 160 to Blackburn's 88. We, like John said, we controlled most of that game. The first half, we'll get onto it later, I'm sure, but first half, we were easily the better team, dominated large parts of it and should have been ahead there. Blackburn offered next to nothing, in my opinion. Just like the game down there, funnily enough, we were kind of robbed there, really. But second, I mean, obviously, second half, it was more even, but I think we still shaded it. And it just goes to show that that's one of the best results of the season. And here's another thing for you. That's the, as I said in the group chat, and I've said it on social media, but to anyone who hasn't heard this already, that is the first, and I looked this up because I'm sad, Blackburn, that is the first time Blackburn have lost in which they have took the lead in a game in which they, well, we scored the goal for them, but when they went as a team, yeah, they got the first goal and got in front. That to me says alone how good a win that is, and that should give us more confidence. And like you both have said, if we get more wins at home, there is no reason why we can't challenge for the top six.
Yeah. And I'm sure this name will come up again very shortly, John, but obviously that was Ross Stewart, his first start since...
Was it Rotherham, wasn't it?
The game before Bower, because that was the game he got injured, wasn't it? So I think...
Yeah, so that was midweek in August.
Yeah, so a long time out. That was his first start. And like I said, we'll get on with the performance. And obviously he did get the goal, two goals, actually. But... just the difference he makes when he's in the team, even if he's not at the best of his game, even if, you know, the attacking outlet is not necessarily there, just his influence when, you know, he's making the runs, he's the vocal point, Patterson knows you can play it up to him, and nine times out of ten he'll win it, and he drags so many defenders away. And, you know, you saw when Ellis Sims came on, when you're playing against a back four, which Blackburn were for the majority of the game, three of them tend to stick with Stewart.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, we've definitely mentioned it before. You know, if Ross Stewart is, you know, we all know how good he is. I'm hopeful that a lot of other people don't know how good he is, because then they won't try to offer him a contract to try and buy him. But like you said, if he's taking out, you know, two or three, you know, centre backs and keeping them busy, that opens up your spaces for, you know, your Roberts, your Diallos, your, you know, Clarks, Sims to do their things. I don't even think. When Sims's goal, when he scored his goal, he wasn't really being marked. He sort of like peeled off, you know, everyone's sort of thinking of Stewart, and Stewart doesn't really have a hand in the goal. You know, it's Ballard with the big challenge, Trey Hume obviously with the flick, and then it's about keeping the ball alive, which Ballard does again with a great tackle, and Sims scores, you know. So everyone's, even though Ross Stewart is, you know, fantastic, and, you know, he probably kept them busy all game. And I mean, all game, there wasn't really any, you know, pressure taken off of them. It then allows those players to, in those moments, you know, to take them. And what a finish from Sims. You know, everyone's thinking we're one dimensional with one striker. You know, there is going to be times we're going to play Stewart, and at times we're going to play Sims, and then there's going to be times where they're going to play together. And what do you do? You know, who do you mark? Who do we go for? And that's the thing that he creates. I think once again, you've got to expect the hierarchy to look again at that. That situation with his contract and think, this guy does deserve it. And I get the pay structures in the clubs and those types of things, but I think just if you've got
you've
that
got to
one
show flexibility with that though now, haven't you?
Yeah, that's what I mean. You have to. You can't, like, if someone said, oh, Stewart wants 20 grand a week, I ultimately think he deserves it and he can justify that. I don't think then, you know, Patrick Roberts can walk in there and go, well, Stewart's on 20 grand, why am I not? I don't think that's not a feasible thing for anyone else in the squad to say. I personally don't think at this time. Different if we did get promoted and, you know, say Dan Ballard has an amazing season. Those types of players you can make special cases for. But other, you know, what we'd say, decent squad players, I think you have to... You know, you have to be able to justify why you're giving him that. And then, you know, Speakman could turn around and say, no, he gets that. He deserves that because he's, you know, we brought him on against Hull and it was like we weren't playing with 10. It was like we were playing with 11. He gave that. He gives everyone else that springboard, you know. And to be fair, clubs are looking at him now. And obviously we know, you know, who's hovering around and those types of things. And do we want that money? Is that money reinvestable? And those types of things. There are players in the squad who are going to be sellable assets. But there's going to be times if we've got a long-term project, you've got to back them. And I think, again, obviously going back to it, my long-winded answer, you know, the hierarchy have got to see how good Stewart was yesterday and just... Every single thing he brings, he brings everyone else into play and it helps. You know, there's as soon as I saw Stewart, you know, in the starting lineup yesterday, bearing in mind we're missing Pritchard and, you know, I could probably name three or four others. You know, Danny Bart at the back, you're thinking, oh God. But you see Stewart starting, you're thinking, oh, now I got a chance. Absolutely, we've got a chance, 100% with him. You know, it gives everyone that raise. And those are sort of players who are, you know, worth backing, you know, with new contracts. I know we've been burned in the past, but I think there are times, you know, where there is what we call an anomaly where you have to say we have to do that. So sorry for the long-winded answer, but yeah, Ross Stewart is just, I don't want to say enjoy why he's here because I want him to be here for a very long time, but just an all-round fantastic player.
Yeah. Just to sort of contribute to that, sorry, Josh, I know this is gonna, my answer is going to be just as long-winded, maybe more so, but I'll try and keep it brief. My argument I've always made now, because I've kind of done a bit of a 180, I think now Ross Stewart's earned more than enough, done more than enough to justify getting a longer contract. And I think while I agree with the model in principle and I like what we're going to do, we are going to sell other players. There's other players, for example, let's say, for example, Jack Clark or Dan Neal, Dennis Sirkin. Say in a couple of years' time you sell them. Those players are easier to replace. I'm not saying they're easy to replace, but they're easier to get adequate replacements for. Whereas for the strikers that we're going to go with, especially when we're going to be looking at younger players and looking at younger strikers, we're going to be going for strikers that have more deficiencies in their game because of their age. So say, for example, we go for a striker that's, say, 21 years old. He could have two or three really, really good qualities, even at 21, which is still pretty decent, to be fair. But Ross Stewart, when you look at him as a player, he's probably got four or five really good qualities that's quite more rare to find in a forward, and especially much harder to pick up on a decent price for us. And Ross Stewart was, what, 300,000, something like that, when we got him nearly 2 years ago. For me, I think I agree with John now. I still believe that Stewart has to negotiate as well, but I think the club have got to step it up. They've surely got to. Even the club can't be stupid to think, hang on, this is a good player here. And even if you look at it from a financial point of view, say in a week's time we announce he's got a 3.5-year deal, for example. If a club then does come in for him, instead of 10 million, which was the alleged quoted price tag, you're looking at potentially 20 or above. And people can scoff at the price tags all they want. They haven't watched him play. He scored, what is it, 7 goals in 9 championship appearances, having never played at that level before.
I think he's got the best goals per minute ratio in the league, I think. 107 minutes a goal.
Exactly. I mean, isn't he only like 4 or 5 goals off Vic Gyökeres? And Vic Gyökeres has played every game at the first half of this season. I mean, come on. The reason the only reason that the price tag quoted is 10 million is because of the contract situation. And so I like a lot of what the club's doing, and I still really like the regime. I think they deserve more credit than they get. But this is one instance where if they screw this up, criticism is fully deserved here. Get that contract sorted already.
Yeah.
Can I just say, at no point can we sell Dan Neal before anyone else? Okay. Just
fine, Jack Clark, Dennis Sirkin, then it's fine.
But despite all this positivity, we did go 1-0 down in the game, Michael. And quite fitting, it was a set piece that we conceded. It was Ross Stewart opened the scoring against us, which hopefully is something that never comes up again, because I never like to see Stewart scoring against us ever. But a bit unfortunate with this goal to ball in the box. It's from a free kick that Ballard gave away, and you'll probably look at that and think that is a sign of a player that hasn't played much football in the last 3-4 months. He's lunging for tackle, he's never going to get there. He's quite lucky not to get booked for it, really. But the ball comes in. I think it ricochets off 3 people, but the last person it comes off is obviously Ross Stewart. It goes into the far corner, and although the performance up to that point was good, that goal was starting to make us think that, you know, this is going to be another typical Boxing Day game for Sunderland, where there's 45,000 there, and the result doesn't match the occasion.
Well, thankfully, that wasn't the case. And I noticed when you said that we were lucky not to receive a yellow card. Are you implying that the referee wasn't very good?
I'm implying the referee was a prick.
I wonder if this is going to be a talking point in this podcast. But you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, that's the type of thing apparently Blackburn have been good at this season, where they get themselves in front, even when they don't deserve it. And at that point, I was a bit, well, I wouldn't say concerned, but I jokingly said to my mate next to me, right, that's it. We're probably not going to get anything here, because apparently Blackburn are quite good defensively when they go ahead, and that's why they win every game in which they have taken the lead. But I mean, it's typical. I also made another joke, so see if you make this up. I said, if Ross Stewart scores an own goal before the January window, he's signing a new long-term contract, even though there's no logic to that whatsoever. So hopefully that's the case. But yeah, obviously you're right. It is typical that from us, it's a set piece. Considering we never ever score from set pieces, that we end up conceding from set pieces. So Ross Stewart was unlucky with it, the way the ball, I think it might have been bounced off Sirkin or someone who Sirkin was marking, and it kind of just went off Ross Stewart into the back of the net. And obviously with Blackburn's record, I was thinking, oh, this could be a long afternoon. But as I'm sure you'll get on to, we did respond pretty quickly.
Yeah, it was 4 minutes that it took John for Sunderland to equalise, and it was through a penalty, the second one that we've been awarded this season, I believe. Ross Stewart involved again. He wins the penalty. Few questions asked by Blackburn Rovers fans on Twitter as to whether it was a penalty. I don't think there's too much debate over that one, but he steps up to take it. He scores it. It's 1-1, and all of a sudden, Boxing Day is looking good again.
Yeah, 100% it's a penalty. You know, it's one of those ones you give the referee a decision to make. You know, he goes to shield the ball. The bloke doesn't get anywhere near the ball and catches Stewart, goes down, penalty. 100% for me. But, you know, there can't really be any arguments. And as soon as you saw Stewart grab the ball, you know, we've all seen how England are and how nervous we are with penalties and those types of things. But as soon as Stewart grabbed the ball, looked confident as anything to me, you know, stepping up, slot it in, literally sent the keeper the other way, just, you know, a fantastic penalty, gets him back amongst the goals, even though he just scored an own goal. You know, that's how much you know a goal scorer is. He'll score at any point.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you can, obviously we know, you know, Sky Sports didn't shut up about it, you know, how Blackburn taking the lead and they've never lost, you know, this season. That didn't really even faze me. So to score that quickly, you know, gave them a little bit of, we've got to be careful here, because, you know, if they ride the crest of the wave of that goal, which, you know, it took us a while, but in fairness, we played the rest of the game really, really well. You know, they knew that they were in for, you know, a bit of a tough game. So it was good. You know, it was good to hit back really, really quickly. And obviously it gets the crowd, I wouldn't say like back on side, but it rallies the crowd, if you see what I mean, quickly. So then again, the players, it raises them. And then you carry on. And to be fair, I think Blackburn, barring one pass and save, I don't think they really hurt us at all after that. And then obviously, as you know, we scored. So I think it was important, I think, to score really, really quickly after the goal. And to be honest, I don't even think the goal was deserved. Yeah, it was a rash tackle by Ballard. You've got to be able to defend those. I think Danny Bart probably does defend that if he's there, but obviously he's not. And it's just an unfortunate, you know, there was no real, I don't think any of their players have won a header or anything. And we're supposed to think that this Ayala, who's in their centre-back, is amazing in the air. And, you know, he again, another one who didn't really impress me. And it was just a bit of a, maybe just a bit of a mess and an unlucky one. So we totally deserved it, you know, after that.
Yeah. And it was a few minutes later, Michael, where the first refereeing decision that was absolutely shocking, in my opinion.
Go on.
Blackburn, like we said, in reverse fixture, did get very lucky with decisions that went their way that were incredibly missed by some trained officials. And this is no different, really. There's a tackle on Clark about a yard in front of the fourth official. The referee has a clean view of it. The linesman probably has a clear view of it. I've only seen it once, but once was enough for me to see it and say that should have been a red card. And not just because of the tackle, but because of the yellow cards that followed after that. Like the Sirkin one, for example, where, you know, he's not really going anywhere. There's no intent, there's no force. It's not high, it's not late. And he got booked for it. That was his first foul. If that's a yellow card, I'm amazed that I think it was Tyler Morton stayed on the pitch for that.
Yes, it was. I think it was anyway. I mean, I know some fans do not like it when we go on about referees, but I think they've got to wake up a little bit and realise why we go on about the referees so much, because the standard is shocking. I said it on my own video. I've said it across YouTube. I've said it across social media. There's a reason we are talking about it repeatedly, because they are terrible.
Just to stop there, well, it's not just because of how bad the standard is, but this season especially, like I said right at the start, we're 3 points from fourth. We're 3 points from 16th. That is how close the league is. If one decision goes against you, you could potentially lose 2 points, you could lose 3 points, you could lose a point. That can completely change where you are on the table. And, you know, at the end of the season, you know, one or two decisions probably aren't going to decide your season and what you gain from it. But, you know, if it's happening every week, which usually it is, with how close it is, it will affect the season. And no matter how well you play, the goals that you score, we're one of the highest scoring teams in the league. If decisions go against you again, like that Blackburn game, both Blackburn games, they can ultimately cost you what you're trying to achieve.
Well, let's look at it from a different perspective then. I've got the table in front of me. Bristol City, Rotherham, Cardiff and Hull are all on 27 points. 2 points above Blackpool, who are 22nd. So if, say, and I can't imagine it's just us that having decisions go against us, like ludicrously bad decisions go against us consistently, game after game after game. So if, say, let's say, for example, I don't know, Rotherham, for instance, get constantly robbed by referees and constantly get decisions go against them that are ludicrous and shouldn't be going against them in a million years, and they end up getting relegated by, say, 1 or 2 points, then they could have a case and go, well, hang on, if it was for competent officials, we would be in the Championship. Obviously, because we're going about referees, we can't excuse the players. And to be fair, most of our players have been good on the whole this season. But the point is, and I've said this before as well, this is going to cost teams. This is going to cost teams. I don't know whether it's because this, I mean, obviously, we don't think this, I don't think standard's been that great. I'm honestly starting to think the referees in this league are genuinely as bad, if not worse, than what they were in League One. Maybe that's a bit of a bold claim to make, but I've seen nothing from officials this season to convince me that they have been any better than League One, at least. And as for the tackle you mentioned, yes, absolutely, Blackburn should have been down to 10 men. Put it this way, I know there's my own personal opinion, but the red card for Embleton at Hull was, yeah, I can see why he was sent off, but I don't think it was a red. Put it this way, if that's a red, then Tyler Morton should have been sent off. I'm sorry, there's no, this one, I mean, the lack of consistency is really starting to annoy me, and it's about time that the EFL or the FA, whoever's in charge of funding for officials, has got to do something. The officials maybe need some help along the way. If you refer back to, was it Alex Pritchard on the club podcast when he said that he thinks VAR should be in the Championship? And I agree with that, because the Championship's a big league financially, because even if you look at, let's say, Burnley, Sheffield United, Norwich, Watford, whoever else,
it's definitely the biggest league financially, because if you win
promotion, if you win promotion, you get 100-odd million, don't you?
So, and then you've got 80 million parachute payments every single year.
Exactly. So this is a big league in that respect. So this, again, not Leagues 1 and 2 not having it, I can kind of get it. Even when we were in it, I understood why it wasn't there. But it's going to be a very hard case to convince me why we shouldn't be having VAR in the Championship. And in that case, if the officials need help, if the linesman needs help, if the referee needs help, then help them out then, for goodness sake, because This cannot be allowed to continue. And it's not just this season either. Even when we've been in League One and I've watched EFL highlights in the Championship, there's been some staggering decisions, staggering decisions. And if this isn't sorted, teams are going to be the ones that are not benefiting from that, rather.
Yeah, penalised, yeah.
It's just consistency. Do you know what I mean? That's the biggest frustration. The amount of, how many times yesterday, excuse me, did we see Diallo get fouled and the referee just gave him nothing? Then Jack Clark put his arm on someone and the bloke fell over and it's a foul. It's like, okay, if that's a foul, you've made a rod for your own back to call that a foul, even though it may be soft. So how are the other ones not fouls? That's the frustration, you know. And then on the flip side, you tell me how the fourth official was not said to the referee, yes, you need to send him off. It's right in front of him. The ball's there. Fourth official would have been watching.
That's the worst of it. That's the worst of it.
That's like, what is the fourth official doing? He's got to have the...
Especially in the Championship now. I just don't know what fourth officials are there for. Fourth officials...
Yeah, I think the ref might not see it from his angle and people in front of him, fine. But then when on the replay, he goes literally across just under his knee. And if he's planted his foot... He will snap his leg. And you can't tell me that Embleton deserves a red card, and that's not a red card again. We go back to the consistency.
Yeah, that's what I'm sorry. I know you're trying to get this a short podcast, but I just can't help but this. But like, look, the amount of times we're on TV, you've got replays literally right there in front of you. Even if you haven't got VAR, use Sky Sports then. I don't know if there's any monitors in there we can put Sky Sports on and look at that and say, okay, that's a red card. Because like John said, I mean, look at Ross Stewart. There's another one. Even in League One, even in the Championship, how many times does he get constantly kneed in the back? Does he constantly get physically challenged? Does he constantly, people trying to probably downright injure him? And yet Ross Stewart gets a free kick given against him half the time. I'll shut up. I'm getting too annoyed.
We'll move on from refereeing and move on to the last thing that happened in the game, John. Obviously, we made subs. Ellis Sims and Trey Hume did come on, obviously, for an injury for Dennis Sirkin. And it was quite a brave move for Mowbray because, quite frankly, I think had we drawn that game 1-1, people would probably look at it as a decent result. Obviously, Ross Stewart's been out for a few months. It would have been very easy to take him off after about 60, 70 minutes, put Sims on to replace him and, you know, a like-for-like replacement. We didn't. Patrick Roberts came on. Sims came on. Sorry, Patrick Roberts went off. Sims came on, partnered Stewart as a front two. And ultimately, we've got the award from it in the end. I don't think it counts as a set piece goal, again, because it did kind of enter a second phase of play when Hume wins it back, Ballard wins a tackle. And, you know, the finish from Sims, like they said on Sky, is just, you know, for, you know, 21-year-old striker, people seem to forget as well. You know, I think that's his seventh of the season, maybe. The composure there to put that in the back of the net. The keeper, questionable for it, but you're probably expecting Sims to go the other way. And it was just a very Christmassy moment, I suppose. Christmas miracle.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we've got two away games coming up, so I think maybe it was important. You know, if we had a home game on Thursday, I think Moby's probably bringing Stewart off. But, you know, because it's a home game, he's mentioned the home form. We all know it's not been good enough. And I think he does have to go for it. He said, like, Stewart, you know, the plan was to maybe bring him off after 60, 70 minutes and maybe go with Sims. But, you know, needs must. Sometimes you could see us growing in the game, barring Blackburn sort of 5 minutes. That's probably generous, you know, little spell they had second half. And then, you know, we seem to learn from our own mistakes. Obviously, there was that the free kick. I think Corey Evans played that to Dan Neil, and then eventually it ended up back to on the centre circle after we had all of our players in the box. So, you know, after that, finally we learned just to zip it into the box. Dan Ballard, fantastic, you know, rising in the air and winning it. Trey Hume, probably a bit of an underrated player, you know, because every time we sort of see him play, it's a bit, oh, is he ready? He doesn't seem out of place, not to me. Obviously wins the flick, and then, you know, we know Sims has got that quality. You don't be at a Premier League club, you know, without that quality, and that's what we're seeing at the moment. And, you know, I think all his weight's on the other side, and he still manages to get that finish away. But he'd have practiced those instinct finishes day in, day out, probably since he was about, you know, however long, you know, he'd been in the academy system. So, you know, he's an excellent player to have. You know, he works really well with Stewart. He did an interview after the game with Stewart saying, you know, he raises my game when he plays, you know, we work off each other. And it's, you know, we are a massive threat going forward. And to be fair, we totally deserved it. You know, in my book, Blackburn offered nothing. We deserved it. And, you know, not many teams roll teams over. So you have to win by those fine margins. And we've got that quality that will make us win those games in those fine margins. And that's what you saw yesterday. And, you know, in front of a bumper crowd, I don't think you could probably ask for a lot more. Maybe a few people left. I'm not really going to get into the debate of people leaving early because everyone's got their own, you know, their own things to do. But, you know, to see a last minute winner, you know, is, you know, I could tell you loads that I've seen, and they're just some of the best moments of your life. Son. And so that's, I think that's all we can ask for at Christmas.
Yeah. But obviously it was a 2-1 win. It did finish that way. And that is a result that, like we said earlier, puts Sunderland up to what is now 8th. Still a season where the table at this point does not matter because you are 3 points from promotion and something like 7 points from relegation. So, you know, there's still a long way to go. There's two winnable games coming up now in Blackpool and Wigan. Not in that order, it's obviously the other way around. Wigan first and then Blackpool on New Year's Day. Two games that realistically Sunderland should be looking to get an absolute bare minimum of 4 points, I would say, ideally 6. And I think we are more than capable of doing that. But last but not least, we'll go for the best standout player from the game yesterday, Michael. Who would
best
you be going with?
So are we going three of the best, or are we
just
going
one,
the best?
Just one.
Okay. First of all, there's a few honourable mentions. Amad Diallo, I think, was really, really good. I think he was pulling a lot of the strings yesterday. Ballard was up there. O'Neill was up there. There was Patrick Roberts, I thought, had a decent game. But for me, the best one was Ross Stewart. I think it was... Ross Stewart, for me, was... What can you say? Ross Stewart was everywhere. He was everywhere. He was occupying centre-halves. He was coming deep for set pieces to defend them. He was coming deep to receive the ball. He was out wide. He was in the box. He was just a constant nuisance for Blackburn all afternoon. And obviously took great composure to get the penalty so quickly after going behind. And obviously for him, I mean, I don't think he would have been fazed by the own goal because we know how good he is. But good moment. And for me, Ross Stewart was the best player. But you could literally pick a handful of them.
John, for you?
Yeah, probably just to break it up, obviously, all the honourable mentions from Michael, I totally agree with. I'll probably go with Luke O'Neill at the back, even though I thought Ballard was fantastic. I thought Luke O'Neill, was probably a captain's performance without the armband. You know, he was getting in people's faces. He had a go at Patterson for not coming for one and got his body in where he needed to. He was being a bit of a shithouse, you know. And I think in the last minute, he sort of dived on the ball, picked it up, like kicked it away. And just for me, just an all round, you know, I think we've all seen the video as well of him at the end of, you know, singing the Can't Help Falling in Love With You. And just, yeah, yesterday just made me fall in love with him maybe just a tiny bit more. Yesterday was a proper all round dogged performance. And it's, especially as a player who's come a long way, you know. He gets a lot of stick, you know, the smiling thing. But I think an all-round player who gives absolutely everything. And when he does that and he plays really, really well in probably not what you'd call his most orthodox position, you know, I think you have to give him a lot of credit.
Yeah. Last but not least, very quickly and very short, Michael, predictions for Thursday's game against Wigan.
My head and my heart are saying two different things. My head, because I know so what Sunderland are like, we tend to drop points in games where I feel like we shouldn't be. And yeah, I've got a feeling that Wigan might have a bit of a slip up. I've got a feeling my head says 1-1, but my heart says if we put the application in and the effort and we just do everything we can do and nothing daft goes against us, then I think we should have enough to win the game. So I'll say head says 1-1, but I'll go with my heart and I'll say 3-1 Sunderland.
Yeah, I think I'd go with 3-0, John.
Yeah, I'd probably go with... Sounds quite cocky, but a 3-0 win, even though they've got a new manager, Wigan. I think they're quite poor. I think they got battered yesterday as well. I don't think they've won yet under him. I don't think, anyway. And, you know, playing away from home suits us. So I don't see any reason we can't go there and turn them over, especially with all their ex-Sunderland players there as well.
Yeah, well, that could be enormous in the end. Hopefully not. But like we said, that game is on Thursday. I think it's on Sky.
It's on the red button.
Yeah. It's on the red button. Hopefully, actually is on the red button this time. Obviously, the Hull game was meant to be, and that I think Hull stopped the cameras coming in last minute. So that was not on the red button for that game, but I think this one should be and probably will be. We'll hopefully have a podcast out on the Friday to talk about what happened during that game. And of course, the next game on the Sunday on New Year's Day is Blackpool away, and we'll have another podcast out that, talking all about that game. But until then, we will see you later.
That's all, folks.